All right.
Greetings and salutations.
Hi.
This is the Vital Check Show.
It is.
Yeah. Ta-da. With your friendly neighborhood MD, Dr. Joe. And alongside, by my side.
It is I, DJ Critical, the one and only.
Bam. Yes. And we have a very special guest on the pod today.
Very special.
We are excited to have her. But let me give you some background.
Very excited.
So actually, the guest and I were roommates back in college.
Really?
Yes. Oh. And when I tell you, like the ADHD brain in me envies this guest, because when I tell you the most like regimented, organized like person I have ever met,
it's not a lie. Yeah.
Like it was. I just met her for like 5 minutes. It was a wonder to watch and live with her. So I am so excited to have her here today, and we are going to allow her to introduce herself.
Please.
Yay. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm super excited. This is my first time being like
on a real podcast.
Welcome.
Yes.
I guess welcome. Any podcast for that matter. So welcome. Again, thank you guys so much.
No problem. Thank you for coming.
Dr. Joe and I were roommates in college. And now are both physicians. So
yeah,
I'm a board certified OBGYN.
Yes, yes.
I practice out in Long Island. I also am the founder and creator of Nash Lifestyle. We're working on developing a social wellness club for women.
Wow.
Like-minded women, boss women, business owners, moms, whoever out there wants to join our collective. We are working on building that up. So I'm super excited to be here with you guys and talk about some women's health stuff, some other stuff, whatever y'all
got
on the agenda.
We're excited for having you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we're happy to have Dr. Nicole here today. And when I tell you, I'm like really like super proud of everything she's accomplished. And again, like she's a boss, guys. And I'm telling you, I wish I had a third of her discipline, but nonetheless, happy to have you here for two episodes. Yeah.
This week and next week?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. She's gonna come back.
So we're just gonna roll through our humble brag. So of course, because we have Dr. Nicole here today, we wanna shout out again her Nash Lifestyle, which, you know, we were talking briefly before the podcast. It's hard to balance all the facets of being a woman, right? Like a millennial mom, nonetheless.
I feel like.
So it's really beautiful to see like an honest and genuine effort to shine the other aspects of us, right? Outside of motherhood, outside of our careers that we spend so much time
facilitating,
like
and
just building.
Building.
Yeah. But in addition to that, she just started a run club.
Yes.
And you run.
So my first time running ever, my mom developed high blood pressure when I was in residency. Mm-hmm. And so she started running to like get off the medication and stuff. So we did a couple half marathons. Then I would say after having kids, I kind of wasn't running anywhere except after them, I guess. And so I know that part of my physical fitness, I do really well with cardio and running. And, but really I have to say the run club was more so born out of, again, trying to create that discipline and that camaraderie. Mm. Like the main thing I'm super proud of, about the run club, and shout out to one of my friends, Lauren French, who kind of took the reins with organization of it and really making sure that we're sticking to, the discipline that we say we want to have, is really the sense of community. Mm. Everybody's there for different reasons. It's not all about physical fitness. It might be about your mental health. It might be about just creating a regimen for yourself, or even, and I hate when people say since COVID, but since COVID, like really not having that human interaction.
Yeah.
So every Sunday morning, it's sometime between 7:30 and 8:30. We're meeting up at different locations in Long Island and we're getting out and running. And my goal is to try to build up, because mine right now is a run walk. Usually we're doing about a 5K.
Yeah.
Probably finishing just before the people that are walking, but I just, you know, my goal is to just get better. So I'm super proud of that.
Yeah. So shout out to Inside Out Club. Like one of the things I look forward to after pregnancy is running.
Yeah.
I haven't run. You
look forward to that?
Yes. Like I'm excited.
I hate running.
I'm driving and I watch people running on the side. I'm just like, I wish, even though it's like 12 o'clock, the sun is beaming, there's sweat and bullets.
Yeah.
But I envy that. Like I really miss running.
No, I had a bad experience with running, so I don't want
to. Oh, yeah. We know. It's okay.
But I'm better now.
It's good. You good.
Yourself? Yes, I did. I got shin splints.
Oh, those hurt.
Like, no.
So DJ Critical thought like running will be similar to sprinting in basketball.
Yeah.
So he thought he was well equipped.
I feel like I was very athletic. I've been playing basketball like the majority of my life, mm-hmm. like on teams, like not just recreational. And I was like, all right, you want me to run? I'll run. And I ran, and it wasn't pleasant at all. No, it was really bad, and I despise it. But I've gotten better. I worked through it.
Okay. And have you found a love for it?
No.
Okay.
I do not love it. Okay. I do not like it.
Okay.
I just do it sometimes when I have to do it, and that's just stop.
But even like the improvement and the endorphins, like that doesn't like
no
nothing.
No. I don't get any type of enjoyment or incitement from it whatsoever.
I'm sorry for that.
No, those shin splints. Yeah, those shin splints was really bad.
But we got you new sneakers, and the new sneakers didn't help.
No, they did help, like immediately.
Uh huh.
Okay. But then you still,
No. Oh, but a run club is cool. Like maybe if I had like, maybe if I joined a run club and I had other people with like different, like similar or different like ideas of like why they're doing it, and
we
get to like exchange, maybe.
Yeah. And I've been sending memes to my friend who's a runner. Apparently, it's one of the best ways to meet a mate.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, see? Y'all didn't start with
you
that.
You know, it's like...
you gotta lead with the right thing.
Where else can you find like-minded people?
But there's so many of them Brooklyn and Manhattan. And there's a couple in Long Island. So that's why we were kind of thinking about doing it there. But
I'm the same thing like you. I have to, like, build up. Because I've been doing, like, mile and a half just, like, straight. But I think I want to start smaller and then just still... Build up on it. Everyone's welcome.
Yeah. So where can they find information about Inside Out Run Club?
So we post weekly on Instagram.
Okay.
My Instagram is Nicole_Ashley_MD.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be posting that on there each week. We try to get it out by Wednesday. I think we just posted for this Sunday today. But
it's all right.
We'll be at Belmont Park in Long Island at 7:30 on Sunday.
Okay.
All
right.
7:30 tomorrow. And it's just everybody is welcome. Just show up.
Yeah, everyone's welcome. So once people are serious and really want to be a part of it, we do have a WhatsApp group.
Okay.
And we'll send out the link and let you join there. So we exchange information and stuff on the chat. And
awesome.
People who are like really a part of it are on there. So yeah.
All right.
Maybe you'll meet the love of your life there, DJ Critical.
Maybe. I'm looking for one.
Oh, okay. So you ready to talk about your critically single segment?
Kinda.
Okay.
It's a sore spot.
A sore spot. Oh, my. Oh, gosh. Okay. So what are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to discuss soulmates. Yeah, and...
Oh, look at that. It's a wordplay. S-O-L-E. So if you start running, you might find your soulmate.
You're like a rapper. We've discussed this.
I told you I used to battle rap.
Yeah, I know. You definitely put you on a URL.
On my J. Cole flow. But he's not a battle rapper. But anyways, look at that. So if you start running,
J. Cole and battles
soul.
Should not be in the same sentence anymore.
Bowed out.
Yeah. But that's just... I think that's like a nice...
It's cowardly.
No, I think he's... That's grown.
He just wanted to stay in his lane. That's all.
That's right.
He just took himself out the big three.
And because of that, there's now no we big have three. This amazing record of They're Not Like Us. So
yeah, he should be included in it. But anyway,
we digress. Go ahead.
So soulmates, S-O-U-L.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking. So I'm no longer dating that person that I was dating that I thought it was going to be serious, which is why it's a sore spot.
Okay.
But
that was mutual. I thought you were already kind of transitioning.
Yeah, but
this.
Then it was some events happened. All right, so sidebar. I feel like
and we're full of sidebar, Dr. Nicole.
Yeah,
this podcast is full of sidebars.
I feel like there was a bit of inconsideration on her part.
Oh,
and then that just allowed me to just release the reins a lot quicker and just easier.
Okay. So you just ripped off the band-aid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't dated for a long time.
Yeah.
So
but my dating is abnormal.
It's abnormal.
Very.
Okay. But I don't know. I have some friends that are dating,
mm-hmm.
and I do feel like these days that if the person that you're interested in does like one or maybe two things, and it's like, all right, no. Is it like our age group? I don't know how old we are, DJ Chris.
I'm around the same age.
I don't know. Is it our age group and we're like, I don't want to deal with any of this nonsense? Or is that just...
No, I personally have a higher tolerance of...
Debauchery.
Yeah. Debauchery.
Did I make that up?
No, I mean, I think it's a word, but I don't know if it fits there. That seems extreme.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But, no, we've been dating for like over a year and a half. Oh. Yeah, we've been dating for a year and a half. And it was just things that came up throughout the dating that just kind of like built, and it was just like little quote unquote red flags and stuff. And then it just came to a head. It was like, all right, well, this us trying to figure each other out, we just, at that point, we just understood like we not like each other, but we're not compatible to that
level.
Yeah,
got it. But talked about it.
Yeah, we did. We discussed it on different occasions when we it was certain topics where we definitely was like on opposite ends of the spectrum. But we was like, all right, let's just shelf that and just see if other things. Yeah. Because we spoke about like, you know, everybody's not gonna check everything
right every box.
On your every box. So it was like, all right, so this is just an open box right here. Let's see if there's other things that can be checked, and you know, just kind of ran its course. When we was like, you know what, we're just better off being friends.
But I mean, I do think our age group, we're like transitioning. You know how people are like, oh, if you're a divorcee, you kind of already know what you want, and like you go into the relationship like, yeah, this is it. I think we're like divorces of all the bad things that happened in life.
Yeah.
So we're going into
relationships. At times, I think I'm, I guess, what, jaded is kind of the word, maybe. But all right, so as far as soulmates, like you and Mr. Dr. Booker. <That's right. laughs> y'all found each other. Mr. Dr. Joe found each other pretty young. And you said you haven't dated for
We met in high school.
Oh, so similar.
You're surrounded by two women married to their high school sweethearts.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My high school sweetheart is
a sore spot.
so sore. You know, they have kids.
Yeah, they do
with
kids.
People.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think obviously, and I don't want to speak
but
for...
But soulmates are a real thing. Do you feel like you...
I think so. I mean, you know, of course, when you meet someone when you're young,
okay,
you guys have to grow into each other. You grow up together and you go through so much. But I think it's just that, you know, that desire to always make it work. That's why for me, when you were talking about the dating and it's like, oh, you know, you just, they did, you know, these things and you kind of decided like, okay, that's not it. That's not going to work. I guess as far as coming from being in a long-term relationship and then transitioning to a marriage, those kind of type of things to me is just kind of like, all right.
Yeah, but at that time you're like stuck. Exactly. Yeah, you really don't have much of an option.
No, but it's not even that. It's just like, it's inherent in the type of relationship.
Yeah.
Right? Like you have to make it, not have to make it, like you desire to make it work.
To.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's,
and you have to want to.
Exactly.
Okay, so I see that.
It's,
So another reason why I brought it up is because in separating with this person, just so happened as fate is fate.
Don't tell me another person.
Crazy. Someone else.
Oh gosh.
Happened to just appeared. That just appeared at the same. Oh. Well, somewhat in the same time.
Look at that. And an answered prayer.
I wouldn't say all that, but it's seemingly like we're like the same sign. We're like, our birthday is like 4 days apart. I don't know if, like, astrologically...
I don't know. I feel like that... Capricorns are just dangerous people.
First of all, dangerous and Capricorn.
But let me see Capricorn and Capricorn. I know that that's
but
a good thing.
But just, like, getting to know her and just talking, like, regular conversation and just, like, interacting with her. Like, we are very, like, alike. And it just meshes well. Because at times we don't have to, like, either, like, explain things. Because we're kind of, like, just on the same... Yeah, right. Yeah. On the same, like... wavelength of just hobbies, jokes, tendencies.
Apparently two Capricorns are very compatible.
See? Oh.
Somewhere near 90%.
Wow.
Oh my God. Look
that
at that.
That is amazing.
You're soulmate.
Why? So yeah, I'm just like, you know, it's very, very surface, very like beginner. Just, you know, just.
I mean, so I think, and this is my personal opinion, obviously.
Shoot.
I think you need to tend to the relationship with yourself.
What? What does that mean?
AKA, like, be single for a little bit.
I am single.
Work on yourself. But no.
Throughout these whole years, I've been single. The last relationship I had was in high school.
Okay, fine. Formal relationship. But situationships, you've been in and out of for how many decades already?
First of all, several. Some.
So, and when was the last time you worked on yourself without having any strings attached, nothing?
I mean, momentarily in between those situations. There wasn't like back-to-back or all concurrent. Mm. There was some space in between.
Okay, so you think this is the best version of yourself that you're offering to this fellow Capricorn?
Yes, absolutely. I've worked on myself throughout these years, and I've really like put together a great DJ Critical for the next woman that I'm going to have a relationship with.
Oh, okay.
You worked on that.
Again. No, I didn't. It's all
it sounds like a tagline.
No, I did
the
not
bachelor.
I didn't practice at home. No. No, but yeah, I feel like at this point, and just in our conversations and stuff, with you and just an array of other people, I feel like I'm more centered and I'm a better me.
Okay. Yep. Lots of transitions for you.
Yeah. Lots. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm growing. So, I'm finally accepting adulthood.
Finally. Okay. Well, as we're entering our fourth decade of life, but okay.
You know, I'm a late bloomer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's
like, because in my 20s and stuff, I was
for the streets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it just...
What a time to be alive.
It's my profession.
Oh, that's true.
It's the access.
A man of the night.
A man of the night. Like Batman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so that probably extended my youthful days. My youth years and stuff like that. And Vibes Cartel is free.
Oh, gosh. He sure is. So my fellow Jamaicans on IG are wilding out.
Might go back to the streets.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, so do you believe in soulmates?
I believe in soulmates. I feel like besides this person that is just awesome right now, because it's like the what we call the honeymoon phase. Mm-hmm. Even like prior to the honeymoon, I've only known her but so long, but we just really like mesh really well, and it's like, oh, it's like a little light bulb. Prior to that, there was somebody else that I was really engulfed in.
It's that hard to keep up.
That I feel like was my soulmate, but. You know, it was just when being a soulmate, both have to kind of
align.
Feel like they're
oh, right.
You
right.
can't just have one that's like, oh, like you're my soulmate, and the other person is like, well, you're my mate. Just a mate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right, so best of luck.
Thank you.
I got to keep a calendar of these things, of these milestones.
You. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to, I'm going to settle down this year.
Okay.
This year.
That's a lofty goal.
Yeah.
But it's already August.
Yeah. That's doable. Okay. This year.
Settle down.
Okay. Next year. Next year. Yeah. Next year is doable.
Like 4 months to get to know someone.
Yeah. Because like, it takes me like timeline. It takes me like 2 years for her to be my girlfriend. So.
Oh, you know, I just saw a post on IG, and this is the last of it, I promise.
Are you shopping?
No, sorry. So I saw this post on IG, and this dude did like a whole big setup of like in
his
a hotel
timeline
room
or something. Oh, I did
of,
that
like
before.
The flower petals and stuff, and it was like, "Will you be my girlfriend?"
Oh.
So, but the comments were like, "Why are you in a hotel room and you're not his girlfriend yet?" And I was like, "Really, IG? Like, this is where we're like."
I've done things like that.
It was a beautiful gesture, and IG
on a second
destroying.
Date.
That's what Instagram does.
Yeah, but
I'm just over like thoughtful.
2 years for you to
I'm
be a
over thoughtful and over generous sometimes. So
right, we've discussed that before.
Yeah. How long before like you and your partner like became like in a relationship, like the talking stage or something? Do you remember?
Well, we met at Coldstone.
Oh, Creamery?
We worked there, yes.
Great place. Mm. Our entire high school.
Oh, yeah. I worked there. And I did some extra stuff there, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you off. Off my
Trevor used to make the ice cream downstairs.
Oh.
So, and then later, I, like, kind of became a supervisor. So, I just always, like, found reasons to, like...
You've just always been just somebody's boss.
I just always found reasons to, like, be around him, even though he was, like, in the basement making the ice cream. And he, like he is right now, because he's in here in the studio with her. He just, you know, paid me no attention. And then finally, I think one of our friends takes credit for, like, introducing us. They went to high school together. But I don't know. I would say that maybe it was a couple of months. I mean, back then in, like, the... What was it, like the 2000s?
Pre-cell phone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so you had no choice but to, like...
at home and stuff, and I remember the phone call. Like, we were on the phone. I was like, so when are you going to ask me to be your girlfriend?
Oh, you're just...
And then, yeah, I was just always like, oh, hello. Mm-hmm. And then he was... I think he said something like...
Tomorrow?
Then you can be my girlfriend now if you want. Something along those lines. Oh, that's
lit. I like that.
But
I
feel like it was like a couple of months. It wasn't that long. Yeah. Not 2 years.
Yeah. Well, I'm 2 years now. Back then, I was quicker to jump. I realize it all depends on the person.
Yeah.
Because there's some people where I'm more aggressive with or just assertive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all right, yeah, this is what I want. And then other people, I'll just be on the fence. And that's, I think.
I got to figure them out a little bit longer.
Yeah. Because with my high school, what do we call a high school sweetheart? I don't know. But with my high school relationship, that was pretty, like...
That was very intense, very quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like that's how we are in high school, though. You're, like, yeah, hormonal that's true. And, that's like, right. Young.
Yeah, but there was other people I was with, and I didn't feel that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, you, there, now, please, whoever you're with, stop that.
Okay.
Wow.
Knew what you want.
Yeah.
Almost had a fight over it, too.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
But you know, you got to fight for love, you know what I'm saying?
That's gosh, no. Mm-hmm. No? I don't like violence. No violence.
This fight.
Yeah.
You
know.
Oh.
You're gonna throw it out.
Yeah, you know who it was.
I do.
But it was Post. I think he was just jealous that
yes.
I took her.
I do recall now. Okay.
But you know, it's my swag. It's DJ Critical. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right. Well, I hope this
nice trip down memory lane.
Oh gosh, I feel like if this person listens to, they're just gonna be like,
"You'd be fine. We've made up. Okay. We've hugged.
Oh, okay." Well, any hoosers, that was our critically single segment, of course.
Yeah, still single.
Still single-ish.
Single. No, no. No, now I'm like single.
No, you just said you found the soulmate.
The Capricorn soulmate. No, but I can't jump the gun. See, this is what it is. I meet somebody, I'm like, oh, no, this is the one. I got to, like, tone it down. Because then I could be, like, too overbearing, and then I'm going to buy her flowers every day, and then I'm just, like, show up to her house and stuff. I don't want to do that.
Okay, so fine. You're single.
Before I was single-ish because there was like some type of situationship that was leading to a relationship. But now I'm just like...
You're single. You're dating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Fine. Call it what you want to call it.
Yep.
All right. So today...
Today.
Obviously, we're here. We're going to tap into our expert panel guest star. but I just wanted to preface it. Some time ago, and I read People magazine like I read the Bible, like it's ridiculous. It's just 2-3 times a day. I don't read the Bible 2-3 times a day.
You get it mailed? Like the real hard?
Oh, no. This is like...
No, it's just virtual.
Yeah, my
just,
email. Yeah. Oh, okay. It's like news alert, people. So anyway.
Oh, you just read... Oh, okay.
I know the celeb gossip way too much. But anyways, I came upon this article because I thought it was interesting. Jessica Biel, who's Justin Timberlake's wife.
They took his license away.
I know. Yeah. I mean... Drunk driving is pretty serious.
Yeah,
but no matter who you are.
He made so many slaps.
I don't care.
You can kill someone.
He can still make music. He can pay somebody to drive.
Yeah, he just got to drive. He didn't need to drive. Yeah. That's what I'm understanding.
Anyways.
Like,
I'm surprised he was driving.
Yeah, right.
But anyways, I mean, she amongst other titles, she was someone before she was JT's wife.
She was, yeah.
But she said she was shocked at how little she knew about her own body until she struggled to get pregnant in her 30s. So she wrote a children's book about it on how to destigmatize conversations surrounding menstruation. And
oh, okay. I'm like, what kind of children's book can you write about not getting pregnant? But then, okay.
About periods and other things. Mm-hmm. So that made me think of how like much myself being even a medical professional, like going through this IVF process, how little I knew.
I didn't know anything either.
Yeah, you had a lot of interesting questions, which we got to come back to because one of them was, if you conceive a child naturally, can you take them out before 8 weeks and freeze them like an embryo? And I was like,
no, you can't
I don't
do that.
Think so.
No.
Oh, okay.
I said that's a different procedure.
It is not.
I just want to make it and then just save it. Just like,
no.
Okay, thank you for
So we're going to delve into a number of topics again because we are getting a little old. Things are changing. Our bodies are different.
I don't believe in getting old.
And I'm assuming you also want to procreate at some time.
Yeah.
In the future-ish. I don't know.
Yeah. The next few years.
So we want to make, you know, well-informed decisions and understand your partner's body.
I do.
It's very important. So with that, you know, we're going to add some disclaimers because, again, although we are medical professionals and we are physicians.
You too, yes.
Not me. Yes. you know, the information that we're going to include in our podcast, obviously, is for informational purposes only. And it's not
You should intended. Put a, like, a little tagline.
Yeah, I'll type it in.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, of course, as the editor as well of the podcast. So whatever we discuss is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. So always, always seek the advice of your physician or whoever, you know, your qualified healthcare worker or provider for any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment. Yes. AKA, we're going to give you information, but you can't sue us.
Our word is not mine. Yeah.
Don't sue us.
We are not your doctors.
So. Absolutely not.
All right. So we opened our chats for questions. But before answering some of the questions, I just kind of wanted to start off with my own journey.
Oh, yes. What a journey it was.
I mean, outside of IVF.
Oh, okay.
So previous to that, I have PCOS. So polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I feel like recently I've seen, and again, maybe with the advent of social media, there's just so much information
now. It's your algorithm. Right. Like, you'll say it a couple times, like just now, like speaking, then you open your phone and it'll be mad stuff.
All PCOS stuff.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of folks with PCOS, which stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. So I was diagnosed, I think, my freshman or sophomore year in college. I've always been obese. And
you're not, first of all, not obese
medically.
You have like cysts in your ovaries.
Yeah,
a lot of I know a lot of females that have that.
Look at that. Look at
like
that.
Just oh, like
they just said in the data. Is that one of the check boxes?
Oh,
I want to know if you have cysts.
What are your
friends and people that I dated? Yeah, like I, you know, people just feel comfortable just speaking to me because I'm very understanding and I listen.
Oh, okay.
So
what do you do with this information?
They open up. I learn.
Oh,
okay. You know, and take it. You know,
got it.
Okay. That's when you said it. I was like, that sounds familiar.
It sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So I've always been obese. I've always had irregular periods. And so part of the workup was an ultrasound. And then back in the days, I feel like the hormonal testing wasn't as strong. Mm-hmm. So it was just like the ultrasound finding of the string of pearls.
Did you ever take like birth control to regulate your...
Yeah, so I've always been on birth control since I was 19, 18. And then, I don't know, by virtue of being Dominican, I've always been hairy. So... I've had the hairy part. So I've had PCOS, but I've never like tested for like the metabolic stuff, although I feel like I've always had some aspect of insulin resistance. So, Dr. Nicole, so let's chat about PCOS and what the folks think about it.
It's a really big topic these days. And there's some part of me that sometimes, especially in our younger population, like the adolescents, even like girls that are going into college, we still have to remember that our brain and bodies are still developing, right? So I do think that some part of it in some younger folks is a little bit overdiagnosed. And so when I do have some young girls coming in for second opinions about it, I'm like, you know, hold on, let's do the actual testing. So there's actually 2 out of 3 criteria that you have to meet to be diagnosed with PCOS. So one of them is what you mentioned, so the ultrasound findings of I don't know if they even call it string of pearls as much anymore, but it's an appearance of the ovaries where you have a bunch of little small cysts. So they're not necessarily always big bad cysts that are going to cause you pain, but the way I like to describe it is you have a lot of cysts that are stuck in like teenage phase. And there's an abundance of them and they don't really mature each month, which is how you end up getting a period and being able to get pregnant because one of them is supposed to. So they kind of stay stuck in that immature phase, and then every once in a while one might mature, and so you get a period, you know, I think the criteria is actually 8 or less times a year. So that's the second criteria, is the irregular periods, or oligomenorrhea, meaning you're not getting it every month normally. And the third criteria is we look at the lab abnormalities, like you said. So they're supposed to be reflective of excess androgens, which is like testosterone or DHEAS, and those are the the hormones that actually give us some more male characteristics, right? So that's when you were mentioning like the excess hair or even acne, those type of things. Now, the what you had mentioned about the metabolic stuff, it's not necessarily included in the criteria, but it's definitely associated. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women with PCOS do have insulin resistance or prediabetes. Even lipid abnormalities is possible. The obesity, like we mentioned. And then some people even can have like blood pressure abnormalities, like that whole syndrome that goes together that we call the metabolic syndrome. My other thought, too, about why it's so pervasive is that just unfortunately the way we're moving as a society is that we're overall not as healthy.
True.
It's hard these days because these are the things that are pushed on us, like our kids want McDonald's, our kids want candy, you know, they're playing video games instead of actually going outside, or outside is not safe. And so I think that we, you know, if we take it back to really like the lifestyle changes that have happened over the years is why we're really seeing more so of much of it. Yeah.
And I've noticed like when I am training, let's say for a marathon, and like my physical exercise regimen is like pretty strict.
Period will act right.
And I will, I can tell you when I'm getting my period, and especially if I start eating like vegan and gluten free and start cleansing, that combination of physical activity and just eating healthier
is enough to get you right. So and the other thing I wanted to comment on about what you said about the birth control is that nothing but the lifestyle changes and really making yourself healthier at baseline is really going to fix PCOS. And some people believe that it never really goes away, just ever. You can manage it and like make yourself healthier and, you know, get your periods back. But birth control doesn't fix it either, right? Birth control makes you get a fake period. Right, so you're taking medicine to like manage your hormones all through the month, and then that last week you take them away and your body like withdraws and has a period, right? So that's not fixing your PCOS. You stop your birth control pill, and for a lot of women, unless you're young and transitioning into your adult life and now your period itself got better, birth control pills are not necessarily going to fix it. It's just for you to get a fake period.
Question, what made you choose to be a OBGYN out of like other...
all the other specialties. So I didn't even necessarily want to be a doctor.
I can't believe it.
One of my friends from elementary school remembered me saying it in second grade that I wanted to be a doctor. And like one time under my post, she was like, "You really said this in second grade?" I'm like, "I don't even know why I said that." Because I did have a good relationship with my pediatrician, even though he called me fat a lot when I was younger. But I was like, he was really smart and like, you know, so I was like, okay. I didn't know what I wanted to do. But I found out about the program we went to, Sophie Davis. And I was like, well, if I don't like it, then I'll already be in like regular college, so it doesn't matter. So what I did was during the time in school, I volunteered for money at different hospitals. Like I went to Harlem Hospital and they placed me on labor and delivery. Like you could get placed anywhere, but they placed me on labor and delivery. So I saw a lot of the women's health stuff that was going on, the labor unit. I volunteered at Planned Parenthood and did pregnancy options and STD testing counseling. And I don't know how I just landed in all these different avenues of like delivering women's health. But when we go to medical school, you do have to rotate through everything. And I was open-minded. I swear I was open-minded about everything, and I just didn't like anything else. And our field has such a variety. We are surgeons, we operate, we get to take part in like some of the happiest moments of people's lives,
that's, you know, true, having babies. Yeah.
And then there's that part of me that just loves the adventure, because OB and GYN can also have a lot of emergencies.
Right.
Like stuff can just go haywire in a second. And it's that like adrenaline rush for me of like managing and performing in emergencies, and that really drew me to it. Also, I think that we have a big impact. As we're learning, you know, women are largely marginalized in our society, and stuff like menstrual issues, people don't even want to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
So they come in the office and it's just like this relief once you like manage it, and I don't want to say fix it for them, but, you know, help them.
You're able to
overcome.
Like,
whatever it is that's been bothering them. It's like, why was I suffering all these years? Like, you know, so that's what I like about it. The schedule sucks.
Yeah, you guys work hard.
I don't sleep.
You guys work very hard.
It's crazy, but it's worth it in many aspects.
Yeah.
Awesome. I wanted to be a pediatrician once upon a time.
What happened?
Money happened. Like, no, while I was young.
I mean, money's still not happening with pediatrics. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, I just started doing things to get money that took me away from focusing on, like, schoolwork.
So that's a common thing, and I'm not saying this was you, but medicine is definitely by no means about instant gratification, right? It's a long road, and so you have to be pretty farsighted to be okay with that, because you're going to miss family functions. You're going to miss out on your friends are making money and traveling here and there when you're still, and then you become a physician and you still have student loan debt. And like Joanne was saying, I don't necessarily agree with salaries and the way that we're paid and stuff like that, but it's still a lot of work. So if I had to rewind, maybe I would have done some stuff differently.
Yeah, but, for sure. I said I would have been a nurse.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, shift work.
Can you still be a nurse, though?
So some states do not allow you to...
Like, demote yourself?
Right. So you have to take your highest degree. Mm. So it depends on the state of your licensure.
But you can't just get, like, a nurse degree?
I can if I want. I can go back to get an RN and then be a CRNA and then make a...
That's exactly what I would have
picked too. As much money as... A CRNA. More money than a pediatrician.
No, they make a lot. I have a few nurse friends.
And it's shift work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you go home, there's no notes, there's no
phone calls. So exactly. You're like on call like 24/7 basically.
She's on call 24 hours.
Yeah, we do... we have... Which we were talking about a little bit offline about the structure of the practices, because... You were mentioning about your delivery and who was going to be there and stuff like that. And so, you know, we take care of our patients and they want us to be at the delivery, of course. But unfortunately, we can't be on call 24/7. Mm-hmm. So our group actually has a structure where there's 8 of us that rotate and share the coverage in the hospital.
The coverage. So like if a water breaks and somebody, okay.
So I'll tell them, you know, if I'm on call, I'll absolutely be there. I do try if I really can. But, you know, we have our families and other stuff that we have to do. You do have to go to sleep occasionally.
Occasionally.
you know, be well rested.
Right. So, but sometimes the calls are long. I try not to do anything more than 24, but people have been on for 36, 48 hours.
Oh my gosh, egregious.
Because there's no regulations, you know?
You just do it.
Yeah, you just...
Insane. Oh my gosh. Oh gosh. But yeah, I mean, I was... So what Dr. Nicole was alluding to was that, you know, I scheduled my C-section date for when my OB was on call.
Okay. And yeah, but you're a planner like that, so.
But the other OBs that have been interacting with, like, I don't know if they don't like my OB or what it is, but the vibe I got was like, well, then what happens if something happens before? I'm like, well, I'll deal with it then, but I want my OB
there. Wait, okay.
And that's normal.
And I feel like you should have that prerogative to do that.
Yeah, but sometimes it's hard to get.
For something scheduled, I do feel like, as that person's primary OBGYN, that it's my job to be there. Right? If I say we're going to be there at a certain time together, then yes. But if your water breaks or, you know, the baby decides to come when the baby wants to come, because that's what happens, then there's always, you know, supposed to be coverage available.
Yeah. PCOS. So one of the questions we got, and it's so colorful, I love it, but I'm going to bleep it out because that is extra work for me to edit. So, okay. So the question was, why does medical research not give up about PCOS, and why is there no FDA-approved treatments that aren't off-label for PCOS? And also, the second question is, why the does God hate women and PCOS is even a thing? Thanks. So what do you have for that, Dr. Nicole?
So I'm sure women that are suffering through PCOS and any other type of menstrual abnormalities really do feel like we are hated and that there is this something wrong with society. But in all seriousness, there is not enough attention paid to women's health issues just in general. I think now we're in
except for removing reproductive rights.
Right. I was going to say, we're in a very politically charged climate where women's health and women's reproductive rights are really at the forefront of all of it. So it's super important that we're very involved in that, mostly on the local levels, right? Like, you know, that's where really decisions are made. And so being vocal about what it is that we expect and what we want is super important. And then the money follows. Right? Like, the money's always going to go into the areas where, you know, those are the topics that are being highlighted at that moment, especially when it's surrounding politics. So if we continue to bring enough attention to it, like, for instance, Halle Berry is now the face of, like, menopause and menopausal issues. Did you guys see that interview she had where she said she was going to different GYNs and they told her she had herpes and all type of stuff, and she really had, like, genital urinary syndrome of menopause, which is when you, when your estrogen is lowering as you get older, your vagina's dry.
And I've been seeing that on Twitter.
And that's all that was wrong with her, right? And so now,
and people are saying that she had herpes.
Yes, because it was burning, and that's what she's saying is burning, right? So, so now we have Halle Berry out there talking about menopause, and there's so much money being funneled into menopause. Even my, the institution that I work for, they paid for all of us to take an exam to get menopause certification.
Wow. That's a thing. Exam. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So it's like, okay, make it a hot topic, whether it's a celebrity or something else. So,
and then it becomes...
Right. And I'm not saying give in to the sensationalism, but certain topics like, you know, PCOS and women's reproductive health, I think that we just need to not market it a little bit differently, but something to change it up instead of just saying, like, you know, that this thing is happening to us, because I don't think anyone's going to care about it in that regard. But once we figure that out, then I think the finances and the push behind the research will be there.
And the, like, also, like what you're saying, like, it's also the population it affects,
right?
So
no one's,
I mean,
worried about us.
It's right? More minority base, or
as far as PCOS is. You know, that's a good question. I can't say that I actually looked it up, but I will say that we are more
prone to it.
Yeah, we're more disproportionately affected by diabetes, hypertension, all the insulin resistance and stuff like that that's associated with PCOS. But there are other groups that have, like, a typical PCOS that will be, like, a thin Caucasian woman. Like, they have the issue too. But
so is it like dietary, like, what are there, like, causes of?
Yeah, so the question that we had submitted was also asking about FDA approved treatments, right? So when I have a patient who comes in and wants to be diagnosed with PCOS, so first we go through the whole workup, right? The blood work that we talked about, the ultrasound, and then understanding your periods.
Right.
So boom, now you're diagnosed. Mm-hmm. Okay, now what do we do about it? The way that I divide it is, are you trying to get pregnant or are you not? So if you're not trying to get pregnant, then we want to focus on the metabolic issues first, right? So that's your diet, your exercise. So I'll always refer them to a nutritionist. There is a supplement called inositol, which is actually, it's a carbohydrate, and it's in our bodies. Like, it's responsible for, like, cell turnover and stuff like that. And it's now on the market as a powder and as
Pills.
Yeah, supplement. And what it does, it has so many good health benefits. It works with weight management because it helps with your metabolism. It helps to regulate periods in patients who have PCOS because it also helps with managing insulin resistance. It has some good effects on mental health as well. And so that's always my first stop. Like, I tell patients, try this supplement, right? Anything for about 3 months and, like, see if you have a good effect from it. I like the powder because it's more readily absorbed. And I'll have patients acne gone, period back.
Get out.
Always put a disclaimer too. If you're not trying to get pregnant and you try the powder, you might get pregnant. So don't play around. I think I had about maybe 5 people come back pregnant after, and they weren't necessarily trying, but so that's usually what I start with, is like, and it's a natural supplement. And so I try to really focus on those things, like, make the change, and it's hard, but make that change first and see if you can re-regulate that way. Now, if this person, because also getting a period every single month is not always necessary if your uterine lining is not thickening.
Right.
So if your uterus is, like, building up, and the lining's getting thick, then unfortunately that can be a risk for cancer, which obesity in and of itself is a risk for endometrial cancer. So for those patients who are just doing lifestyle modifications or really don't want to do anything, I'm like, if you skip a period for 3 months, you got to come in, we'll do an ultrasound. If your lining's thickened, we have to, you know, give you some medicine to shed it, and you can go back on about your merry life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So those are really the two ways. Or some people want to be on birth control because they want to get a period. They want to know when it's happening. So fine. The group that's trying to get pregnant, I still say the supplement. I still tell them to do the inositol supplement because it really does help with fertility. And then we are going to start doing ovulation predictor kits, because remember before I was saying those eggs are stuck in like this teenager phase and they don't mature. So you're not releasing an egg every month. You can't get pregnant without releasing your egg.
Right.
So the ovacetol can help do that. But the ovulation predictor kit will tell us if you're actually ovulating. So I give them instructions. And that's one good thing too in practice. Like if people are coming to me about a lot of the same thing, I'll like type an information sheet for patients
and just have it readily.
Yeah. So it's on there how to use your test strips, how to test. If you're not getting positives on the ovulation predictor kit and you have PCOS and you want to get pregnant, now we need to do something else.
Right.
Now I'm a generalist, and medicine has a lot of focus lanes. So there are REI doctors, so reproductive endocrinology and infertility doctors,
right,
that focus specifically on women's reproductive health and especially women who are trying to get pregnant. But there are some of us generalists that will help women with PCOS with medications that can help induce ovulation or get your body to release more eggs. But I would say the majority of us will then refer to an infertility doc for whole workup.
Got it. That was amazing. That was so helpful.
So informative.
Oh my gosh.
Another question. So what happens when women have a cyst or like several cysts that becomes painful or like that may interrupt
their periods and like naturally?
Yeah, like if they wanted to give birth, like that would become a problem because of the cyst, then at that point it's just like surgery based, like you have to like remove them?
So it depends on what type of cyst it is.
Mm-hmm.
So every month we form a cyst when we release our egg.
Right.
It leaves a little cyst behind. If you get pregnant, it stays there for a little bit to help support the pregnancy. If you don't get pregnant, it just shrivels up and goes away. That's called the corpus luteum. It makes progesterone for pregnancy. And it also, when you don't get pregnant, it makes progesterone, which makes you hungry and feel crappy when you get your period.
Look at
so
that. Oh my
then,
gosh.
But you can form a pathologic cyst, meaning one that's not supposed to be there.
Be there. Okay.
So it can have fluid in it.
Okay.
It can have blood in it. And the cysts that have fluid in it are more likely to just go away if you wait for another period cycle.
Mm.
The ones that have blood in there are a little less likely to do so. Now, when we're deciding about whether or not you have to do something about it, we really tend to rely on the size. So if it's greater than 6 centimeters,
right.
Then it has a propensity to like twist your ovary, and you can have what's called ovarian torsion. Where like the cyst twists the whole ovary and then your blood supply to your ovary is cut off, which is bad
because really
the ovary can die.
Yeah.
Right.
And we only got two. So.
Exactly. And you need them. So if it's bigger than 6, we would recommend surgery no matter what type of cyst it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's smaller than that, then technically I'll usually wait about 2 months and have the patient come back and see if it left. Right. And I left out one group of cysts. There's another group of cysts that are bad, right? There's cysts that could be cancerous. So if it looks really bad on ultrasound, has like solid
it's like
components,
dense or
yeah, like we call them excrescences, things that we're worried about, that's a whole nother different lane.
Gotcha.
We send blood work, might go send you to like an oncologist, but those should come out too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good question.
Yeah.
And somebody actually asked that.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that question was, do ruptured ovarian cysts cause heavy bleeding? I guess you didn't mention what type of cyst, but I guess
the ones with the blood, maybe.
Yeah.
Or just a cyst
rupture. Yeah, if it has blood in it and it ruptures, it's like the blood's just kind of sitting there in your pelvis and waiting to come
to
out.
To be released.
Some of it can backflow through the tubes. And so, yeah, you can have bleeding from having a ruptured cyst for sure.
Good.
One more question.
Mm-hmm.
This is so informative. I love you being here. This is going to be a great 2 weeks. What this is not with COS, but what can people do with like hormonal acne?
So
is that in the OBGYN field as well?
So people come to us about it because sometimes they'll go see a dermatologist, which most people do first if they have hormonal acne. And there are some dermatologists that will manage it, but then sometimes they'll circle back and be like, go to see your OB.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. One, of course, your skin regimen, right? Like you want to really make sure you're using clean products, like cleaning your skin and cleansing it appropriately. The second, I still would tell them to try the supplement, the inositol, because it balances your hormones. And so for some people, like I said, I've had a couple of patients whose acne like disappeared.
Wow.
But does it come back like when you're off it, or is it like something that you have to take for a certain
amount
of time?
So I can't say that I've
observed long enough to say that somebody came off of it and their acne came back. Mm-hmm. I personally haven't seen that just yet. But if you really treat all the other underlying stuff, so it might not even be with the supplement per se, but say you're doing like your lifestyle modifications and stuff like that, then probably that would have a more long-term effect. Right. Now, a supplement while you're taking it is going to do
what it does, and then you stop it,
it might not. So the other thing with hormonal acne is there are birth control pills that target, or the progesterone in them target decreasing those androgens. Remember we talked about that before. So the testosterone levels. Yeah, so we'll pick something like that has like a drospirenone is a particular type of progesterone in it that specifically targets patients who are having like excess hair or excess acne because that particular progesterone like binds up and like lowers testosterone. The other thing you could take is spironolactone. Mm-hmm. So it's a medication that, again, also helps to lower androgen levels. So there's like pills and supplements you could take, but I usually try to start
with the
more natural.
I think I'm good.
Okay. So what are some common misconceptions that you find? Because as you mentioned, like even like with the perimenopausal or the menopausal women, like I'm happy to see like there's some influencers I follow. And they're starting these, and they're women of color starting these conversations. Like, right, so Tabitha Brown is, she calls it Perry. She's like, Perry is messing me up. Right, so she's like, bamboo sheets, because I'm pregnant, we're both having hot flashes. I'm like, oh, let me try bamboo sheets. If it's working for perimenopausal women, it has to work for the pregnant women. I mean, the bamboo sheets, plus or minus. But, right, so what are, like, some, and the other one I follow is actually a Brooklyn clothes designer. And she says she had like frozen shoulder, and apparently that's a thing. And I was like, I've never heard of this
during pregnancy or menopause.
Menopause.
Okay.
So there's things that I'm finding out other people's journey because again, like people, I feel like we don't talk about these things,
right?
So what are some common things that you find folks are coming in to you to discuss that it's like you thought it would be, you know, readily.
Common knowledge.
Common knowledge, but it's just like, oh, people really, we just don't know.
Yeah. Definitely, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, that your menstrual cycle when you're younger can be irregular. So like prescribing early diagnoses to things that really don't need it is something that's super common. And I think like anxiety provoking in a teenager, right? Mm. Like now I have this thing and it's not necessarily, you know, true. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks that their vagina is supposed to smell nice. Like, it's not supposed to smell bad. It's not supposed to smell, like, fishy.
But it's not flowers.
Right. Like, it's normal. So if it has a little bit of, like,
a
musty odor or a scent. Yeah, a scent. Like something.
Odor just seems like.
Yeah, odor sounds bad. Yeah, right, right. If it has a scent.
A distinctive scent.
Right. Although scent and odor are kind of synonymous, but okay.
Odor just. Odor,
it, like, flows off the tongue.
Odor just looks like there's a green gas coming from it.
Especially before your period or after your period, very, very normal to have. Also, like, an occasional feeling like it might itch down there. Mm. Like, especially you go to the gym a lot or something like that.
I feel like that just makes sense because there's a lot going on.
It's sweating. Yeah. Like, you're sweating. There's hair there. So your hair removal, like, the way that you remove hair, shaving is bad.
Yeah.
Right? It's really, really bad for your skin. The vagina has to be moisturized, right? Mm. So it's still skin. So whether you're shaving or waxing or something like that, or even after you like shower and cleanse, my favorite thing is coconut oil, right? One, it's a like a light moisturizer, and two, it does have some antifungal properties.
Oh.
So it like has a dual purpose, and it's
notes.
It is natural, right? So
I could rub some coconut oil.
That, or
people.
Like if something's really bothering you, vitamin E oil, like those things are really good. Now with pregnancy, there's so many things, right? I don't know that we can or should, or maybe it's fine to equate pregnancy and menopause together because they're just both these really, these periods that have like intense hormonal fluctuations, right? So anything that's going on with you, you can probably relate it to a hormonal change during your pregnancy or during menopause. So this is why now menopause has really become so important, I guess, beyond Halle Berry to people because we're really realizing the impact that it has on everything.
Yeah.
So I actually have a couple of patients too now that are actually going through premature ovarian failure.
Oh.
So they're less than 40, their periods have stopped, they're having hot flashes, their labs are showing that they're in menopause.
Now, our ovaries have good function as far as your estrogen and everything like that until usually around age 65. Mm. And so you really need it for your cardiovascular health, for your bone health, right. for your mental health, right? That like brain fog that you get when you're pregnant or when you're going through mm-hmm. menopause. It's important for so many other reasons. So I think now people are finally starting to pay attention because there's so many other things that can become of it. So I guess with the woman who's talking about her frozen shoulder, like estrogen is important for your bones. Mm. So, you know, that's why when we get older, we start testing for osteoporosis and right. stuff when your estrogen levels decrease. So it has so many implications. It's beyond just getting a period or, you know, being able to have a baby. So that those I would say are like some misconceptions about stuff. Like usually we can relate anything to hormones and it's probably normal, but even though it's uncomfortable, but yeah.
Do you have kids?
I have two boys.
Did while you were like pregnant and stuff and you were OBGYN then
yeah.
So do you feel like being an OBGYN and going through your pregnancies you just floated because you kind of knew like what was going on, when, how, what, and you just like right. or did you still have like you
yeah,
know like
questions
yeah
like so, one of my friends, my co-resident, she actually bought the Doppler, like the heart rate monitor mm-hmm. to check her like her kid's heart rate when she was on call, because obviously she's working 24 hours mm-hmm. and she's like yeah. you know, I haven't felt him, let me just check the Doppler. So like right. were you one of those people who like
like scanning myself yeah and stuff? Yeah yeah, I was doing that after the shift. I would like go and like sign on myself and everything. In the beginning you can't feel the baby moving, so that's it's like right. is this baby still in there, yeah, like what's yeah, happening yeah. And I that was a really good question because yeah, it's different going through it, right? Mm-hmm. And I definitely had a newfound appreciation for the things that my patients were going through right. after mm-hmm. having kids myself, because it's definitely not easy. So I wouldn't say I coasted through, but my first pregnancy, I felt actually pretty good through that one.
Mm-hmm.
But same. The labor was just like
so my, it's just like you being on both sides
right. I learned that I have no pain tolerance, so I feel for the women who are worried about the laboring pain
and the epidural, and so
I do spend time making sure I talk to them about that because yeah that was not cute. And then just the fact that you really should be open-minded going into your deliveries, because I'm terrible. I really cannot see without my glasses. But when I went into to have the baby, I took my glasses off. I lowered down the tones on the monitor. Like, I just let my doctor do her thing, because that's really what we're there for. And unfortunately, with social media and just the way that Black maternal health is right now, people are scared. And yeah. even if you have a Black OB, I've had patients walk in and meet me the first time and be like, so what's your C-section rate? So what do you think about this? Yeah, like just like wanting to know how they're going to be treated, I guess. But I will say 9 times out of 10, if patients understand that we're going to be there for you, we're going to be there to do the right thing for the baby, and like let us work
mm-hmm.
and work together. I'm not saying like if I tell you you should do something that you have to do
right,
it.
Right.
But, you know, we can have a dialogue and not, you know, make everything well they said on TikTok, and then I think that some of those relationships might be a little bit better, especially as far as people's labor experiences, because I find that people that go into it with this negative energy
yeah.
it's like something crazy happened,
or with good expectations, like so for yeah. my first pregnancy, right, I printed out like a 20-page birth plan mm-hmm. right.
That sounds very Dr. Joe-ish.
Whatever prepared was right, right? I wanted to do, right, the normal spontaneous vaginal delivery.
Now, quick interjection. Did your doctor go over the birth plan with you?
Yeah, she was open to it. She's like, all right, what do you got? She's like, let's go through it. What, you know, what are your feelings and stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think for our generation, like, the word natural has been not overused, but, like, embedded in us, mm-hmm. right? So everything about us has to be natural. So, like, even when people are like, oh, did you have a natural delivery or a C-section? I'm like, listen, birthing is natural,
right?
Whether you were assisted or not
yeah.
assisted,
yeah, right?
Right. So, and again, I'm very sensitive with that term natural, right? Then like, oh, I don't want an epidural at all. Mm-hmm. So like when you go in and like, I don't want an epidural. I want to labor by myself. Like, I don't want to be induced, mm-hmm. right? So it's like this pressure that we have to perform in the most natural way for one of the most painful experiences of our lives.
Yep.
And then, you know, as soon as I, and again, my daughter did not come naturally, vaginally. Mm-hmm. I had to get induced at 41 weeks, and that induction was hell, like mm-hmm. literally the devil. And I was like, can I please get my epidural? Mm-hmm. And it was the best decision, right? So, and so with this second pregnancy, I have no expectations. And I think some OBs had issues with that. But I'm like, listen, whatever you have happens to, do, to get this baby out, do I'm it. Cool with it. Like,
healthy baby, just get it out of there.
I was like, if it happens this way, I'm cool with it. If it happens the other way, it's cool. But I don't want that expectation because I feel like it's so much pressure.
It's a lot mm-hmm. of pressure.
For something that like,
and you don't know how you're going to feel, especially when it's your first baby. So when patients come, I'm happy that your OB went over the birth plan with you because we should, right? And unfortunately, again, in medicine, you got 15-minute appointments that are triple booked, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the patient has their birth plan. And, you know, a lot of my sessions run behind, right? Usually patients know you might wait 30, 40, maybe an hour. Wow. But when I come and see you in the room, I'm going to answer all your questions.
I'm going to
talk to you. You're going to have your time just like everybody else.
Yeah. Right.
But, and I'll try to regiment it. Like, okay, the 36-week visit, bring your birth plan with you.
Mm.
And our hospital actually did a good thing by actually making a template now.
Oh, good.
So
that's nice.
And they called it birth preferences.
Okay.
Right? So what you prefer to happen.
That's a
right?
good way
to make it. Pretty good.
Like, yeah. Because you never know. But pain management is a big thing.
Yeah.
And if you decide that you don't want an epidural, that is fine, but you still need a pain management plan.
Mm.
Pain management is not only about getting medication.
Mm.
There's breathing techniques. Mm. There's hypnobirthing. There's reflexology.
Oh.
If you're going to have a doula or something, maybe they're
That's
certified
right.
in those
yeah.
things. Or you and your partner can work on it, but it actually takes work.
Mm.
Like, you have to know how to become one with your body and your breathing techniques. It's not okay to just say, I don't want an epidural, and then come in and all the medical professionals are like, well, we can't really, other than, you know, the options of medical pain medicine that we have, like, we can't teach you how to breathe, you know?
Mm.
Like, those are some of the things that, you know, patients have to,
like, those classes that, you know, you have the male and the female, and like,
oh yeah, like Lamaze. I don't know how many of them exist anymore. And I tell patients, honestly, you can go on YouTube and find some great information about, you know, your pain management techniques that don't require epidural pain medication. Mm-hmm. But if you need it, then it's there for you.
Right.
You know?
What do you think about, what's your opinion on, like at-home births? Like, because you mentioned doulas and stuff like that.
And also the natural kind of
realm.
They scare me.
Yeah. As a medical professional, as an OBGYN, I think I see way too many emergencies to ever agree with a home birth. You know, it can be seconds. Like, in the hospital, we get you to the operating room and we can get the baby out within a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening if you're at home and there's an emergency.
Right.
And I watched a video recently of a couple that's, like, on social media, like, influencers. Tiny little girl. Baby had to be maybe 8 pounds something. I'm hearing them on the phone saying something about, like, calling the doula and saying, the fluid came out and it's brown. Like, okay, now your baby already pooped inside. Now you're still trying to labor at home. She had a whole shoulder dystocia on video.
Oh, my God.
So a shoulder dystocia is when the baby's head comes out, but the shoulders don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's an obstetrical emergency.
It is.
The baby is stuck.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're on the video trying to call the ambulance and they're in the back. It was so scary. And I'm like, and they recorded it and, you know, put it online. Cause,
oh, my gosh.
You know, and the baby eventually came out and was fine, and so was the mom. But I think these are the things that people see and think that it's okay, but these things turn into complete badness, right? So what I would hope for is that our hospital facilities just become a little bit more friendly to patients who desire births that have less interventions.
Mm.
So, like, a birth center attached to the hospital, right? Like,
where you can be readily available if need.
Exactly. You can be wheeled right through a wing or something to the operating room if you need to.
Yeah.
But the experience on that wing is maybe like you're at home. And there are some centers like that exist. Like, I know there's one in Harlem, I think, or they might not be attached to a hospital. But my vision of it is that you have the close proximity.
Yeah.
And the other thing that people have to remember is everybody is not a candidate for a home birth.
All right.
If you have high blood pressure, if you have diabetes, if your baby is measuring small, if you have any issue it's a no. Yeah. Like, it just has to be.
You can't just be pregnant and just feel like you can just get a pool of water and just like put it in there.
And I have a lot of patients who come and say that, like, I want a home birth. I'm like, well, you got to go find somebody who's going to attend the home birth, because I, you know, I don't do that. But I think if.
That's going to be my other question, too. Like, as far as OBGYNs, if they have like private hustles, to like just be on site.
So I would say, a lot of physicians that have side hustles is that it's not always directly related to what we do on a day-to-day. Like, some side hustles might include, like, telemedicine or something like that. But obstetrics and delivering babies is really high risk. So you have to have insurance. So figuring that out, I think, would be a little too much. But getting on the telemedicine is like, oh, I have a yeast infection. Like, all right, I'll send you some fluconazole. That as another, like, side hustle or something. Yeah, yeah. Other side hustles that people do are med-mal. Like, so for legal cases, they'll be, like, an expert witness.
Med-mal means malpractice.
Malpractice.
Yeah.
I got that.
Medical malpractice. Sure. The other thing that some people do, but I can't get with it because my morals just won't let me, is, unless, I guess you could be on the other side of it, I don't know, like, people who review insurance claims and, like, deny them.
Oh.
I hate them.
Yeah.
Anytime I have to do, like, a peer-to-peer with the other person, like, you're denying a test that the patient needs, it's just annoying. Mm. So people do that, but I don't know if I would do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I think we had a lot of good
information. Yeah, this is a whole lot of information. Yeah. My mind just like...
Like that emoji.
Yeah. But it was just very informative, because as someone who's planning on having a pregnancy at some point, well, not me per se, obviously, but my partner, whoever whoever she may be. Right, exactly. Yes. And just knowing people that have, like, different, like, PCOS or, like I said, hormonal acne and just, like, stuff like that is very informative. I'm glad you're here. And I'm looking forward to the next episode as well.
So one of the comments, it wasn't a question but more like a comment. So one of my cousins, she's younger than me, and I posted her before, had a rare form of endometrial cancer. And she wanted to remind folks to get your yearly GYN exams. Mm-hmm. And your pap smears, because, you know, and in retrospect, it kind of fell off for her. So she wanted to really put that plug in that, you know, we need to care of our bodies and do our follow-ups. What else are we missing? Like, what else should we do?
I totally agree with that, for sure. Some women will use an OBGYN as their sole primary care provider, which some of us are cool with and some don't like as much. You know, I'll at least start it. And if something is wrong, I'm like, okay, you have to go to your endocrinologist or you have to go to your primary. But we expect to see you every year, right? I do pap smears every year. Some of the guidelines for our governing bodies say it's every 3 to 5, depending on your age and if you get HPV testing with it. Because a pap smear looks at two things. It looks at the cells on your cervix, and then it also looks for the HPV virus, which can cause cervical cancer. And so one or both of those might be abnormal. But the guidelines say if you're negative for both, then you can actually wait 5 years to be retested.
Wow. But it doesn't, like, it doesn't hurt to get tested every year. Like, is it, like, invasive or anything?
So,
like,
to me, what would hurt a patient is if insurance doesn't pay for it. But they still do. Okay. Even though the guideline says 3 to 5 years, because my thing is that most people who come to the GYN are coming for their pap smear. So you're still forgetting about your clinical breast exam, right?
Oh, that's
your,
important, yes.
STD testing. That's just a check-in about overall what's going on. Like, I always, oh, we saw you last year. Like, what's been new? What's going on? And stuff always comes up, right? So there's always something that could be addressed. And as women, we tend to kind of wait around until things are the worst. You're in the ED, hemorrhaging and anemic and need a blood transfusion. Oh, I gotta go to the OBGYN.
Yeah, it's better to be preventative than
And people hate pap smears. Like, it's not comfortable. It's not just comfortable. Like, they hate mammograms, right? Yeah, yeah, after age 40, you need to get your annual mammogram. But you could do anything once a year. Like,
that's true.
I love going to the doctor.
You do?
Yeah.
I can't say that I do, but I'm happy that you do.
Why not?
I just, maybe, like, trying to find time is
like, oh, no, nah, I like going and just knowing that things are,
everything's okay.
Yeah, like, I like that. So then I could go about just living life the same way I am and not have to change things.
Living la vida loca.
Living my life like it's golden.
Yeah, oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
All right. So with that, we're going to end our random acts of kindness. So I recently had a birthday, and
happy birthday, feliz cumpleaños.
22nd.
Okay, you're a Cancer.
I am a Cancer.
I'm the 28th.
Yeah. Oh, so happy belated to you too. Thank you. That's right. That's
happy belated birthday.
Thank you. Your birthday celebration.
And Maverick turned 2 on the 26th.
Oh, look at
Maverick.
That.
That's a nice name.
Yes.
So exciting. So many July birthdays.
Yeah.
But our best friend, well, like, you know, the yard ute himself, he got me a mom-to-be spa package. So it was a prenatal massage, a scrub, and a facial. And I want to, like, you know, tell folks that, yes, we have registries for the baby. The nursing stuff, although it's for mom, is for the baby. But maybe, you know, for your next pregnant friend, consider something for the mom-to-be. You know, like that
they
was
have
such
spaces on the registry now for that.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I used Babyliss.
Okay.
And they have like a category that's like for the parents, and you can put like on there, I guess, like meal cart.
Oh, DoorDash. I love a good meal train.
That's what my group got me, a DoorDash card.
Okay. Oh, that's cute. So yes, yeah, so
I gave a spa package before.
You did?
I did. Okay. I mean, she wasn't a mother to be. It was, she was going through nursing school, and I kind of like set her up.
Oh, not me. I was like, you didn't get me anything.
No.
You're so thoughtful.
I am. I'm very thoughtful.
Yes, that's he's great. Very generous, as he's mentioned. Yeah. But so, yeah, so, you know, for
gonna come to this run club.
That special. For that special lady, pregnant mom to be, you know, consider something for her, just for her, not just for the baby.
Yeah.
For your next random act of kindness.
That would be cool.
All right. So with that, kind folks, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening.
This has been awesome.
We will see you soon in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.